Welcome to Ageless by Rescue. This podcast is devoted to exploring the science of rejuvenation, uncovering the most trusted experts, the must-have products, innovations, and technology in the field of vitality, aesthetics, new beauty, and cosmetic enhancement. I'm Baha Etmanen, the founder and editor of Ageless by Rescue. Ageless by Rescue gives you unprecedented access to international and Australian experts and visionaries.
Hi, it's Miranda Kerr here on Ageless by Rescue podcast.
Hi, this is Martha Kay and you are on Ageless by Rescue podcast.
I'm Trini Woodall. I mean, I feel I'm being interviewed by the sexiest woman in the world.
Today, I'm joined by Dr. Amy Chahal. We're exploring non-invasive skin tightening and lifting modalities and other technologies that are available in a cosmetic physician's toolkit. Raised in Toronto, Canada, Dr. Amy completed her medical training in Australia over 15 years ago and is now a practicing cosmetic physician. Dr. Amy is passionate about skin and minimally invasive combination therapy and treatments. As the founder and medical director of the Centre for Medical Aesthetics in Surry Hills, Sydney, Dr. Amy provides evidence-based care, empowering her patients to make well-informed decisions on an extensive consultative process. In today's episode, I even asked Dr. Amy to share with us two simulated consultations, one for a complete aesthetic newbie and one for someone who's quite advanced, and to guide us on the questions that we should be asking our own cosmetic physician when we're having a consultation for what we should explore next. Today, Dr. Amy will guide us through the world of non-surgical skin tightening and lifting, covering the latest techniques and technologies, including, yes, thread lifts, radio frequency, and bioregenerative skincare. Dr. Amy, welcome to Ageless by Rescue. I'm delighted to have you on the show. The first time I met you was at an event where you were talking about age-defying skincare.
Yeah, I remember that.
I remember that too. And I remember a lot of the great points that you made. And you're an aesthetic physician and you were talking about what skincare can and can't do, what aesthetics can and can't do. And so for me, this became like a really great theme for today's show. And I want to talk about, you know, the shift away from filler and injectables. There seems to be like a lot of talk about that, particularly since the changes in the TGA laws about what a physician can and can't say on social media, what needs to happen within a consultation. But also there's been this general trend of moving away from quick fixes and just adding volume. Am I correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. And I think more and more people are wanting a more natural aesthetic. And to do that, we really need to consider multimodalities treating at each layer from the skin down. You know, those tools that were used quite heavily in the past, they're not always the only solution. They work in conjunction with these other modalities that I think we're going to touch on today.
I actually saw an Instagram post that you did, I want to say 3 months ago now, and it was about...
I don't remember what I posted 3 months ago.
It was about threads. I DM'd you and I said, wow, these results are extraordinary. I've had threads before. And yes, for me, the results were in fact extraordinary, but not long lasting. And then that kind of started another conversation that we were having about what is possible in the realms of aesthetics pre-surgery. And so I'd love to start with a little bit of a 101 on the anatomy of aging and what are the different things that we're going to notice as we age, so that then when we talk about solutions, we can talk to the different facets of aging and the different modalities that are used to treat the different facets of aging.
Sure. Look, I think really pairing it back to basics, as we age, we're losing collagen and elastin in our skin. So that healthy, hydrated, bouncy skin that we have in our teens and our 20s, especially in our 30s and 40s, we start to notice that that's absolutely not the case anymore. And when people start worrying about sagging and jowling, that's because we're losing volume in our fat pads, our bones, so our mandible, our maxilla, those are actually resorbing as well. So imagine sort of you have this great structural support and it's pulling back and all the tissues hanging off of it are then, you know, gravity is playing a role and everything starts to sag. So that's mostly what people are seeing as they enter those later decades.
And you know what's really interesting is that I had not heard about my bones reabsorbing until about 4 years ago. And I was seeing my aesthetic physician. I'd just gone through menopause. I didn't know what was happening. Like, I was rapidly aging. And he pointed out to me that my collagen production was like in free fall and that I really needed to look at my hormones to help protect that with estrogen. And then the other thing that he said is, but darling, your bones are also reabsorbing and it happens. And so you've got multiple things going on. You've got muscle loss and density changes. You've got fat pad loss. You've got bone reabsorption. And also you've got topical damage to the skin, which is, I guess, you know, the wrap that holds it all together. So when you speak to multimodality, it's like, well, of course. Of course you can't, there isn't one magic bullet. Even a facelift isn't a magic bullet.
No, absolutely. Treating the skin is so important. A facelift doesn't do that, right?
Absolutely. So if we talk about that and the underlying mechanisms behind rejuvenation, should we take actions at a time so that, you know, we don't bounce all over the place? What are some of the aesthetic, non-surgical, non-injectable options we have for, let's start with lift and firmness? Because there's two schools of thought. A lot of people are saying anything you do with devices is just going to give you a teeny weeny, itty bitsy incremental benefit, save your money for a facelift. But there are other people who say if you catch it at the right time, energy-based devices can do extraordinary things. Over to you as the expert.
Yeah. Look, I honestly use energy-based devices in my practice and I see great results. It has to be the right candidate, right? So when is the best time to jump on to energy-based devices for a little lifting and tightening? I'd say if you don't have a lot of laxity and loose skin, you can consider this avenue. If you're still at an age where you're, you know, your ability to produce collagen is not as debilitated as it would be in your 50s and 60s, so below 50, I'd say, is an option that you can consider. And if you only have that mild laxity and you're not willing to consider a more invasive procedure, absolutely consider it. All these devices are operator dependent. You know, if you go to somebody that you trust who truly understands their device and you set up with realistic expectations, you know, I think you can have a nice, subtle result.
Are you able to share with the devices that you do have in your clinic? And the reason I ask that is I'm always curious as to what a doctor will invest in. So I'd love to know why you would have more than one device and what does what in your clinical practice.
Yeah, so my go-to, and I usually tell people, I say, look, there's a range of options from least invasive to most invasive. And I think Bahar will be able to touch on that most invasive option today. But look, the least invasive option, if you're looking for tightening of that fibroceptile network, which is just below our skin, for me, my go-to is the Morpheus 8 device. And I know you can go down a rabbit hole looking into that. And there's people who love it and there's people who don't.
But I'm sad that that's the case for absolutely any treatment. I mean, there are people who hate skincare or will be.
Yeah, definitely.
It depends on how it works for you. I've never had Morpheus, so I'm absolutely curious as to, you know, what you're doing with it in your clinic, why you like it, who's a good candidate for it in your clinical experience.
Yeah, I mean, I've got the 24 pin head here with me. It's 24 gold-plated pins. We can go down to 4 millimeters with it, which is where I want to be in the lower face with people who have that laxity and that jowling. We're able to put radio frequency energy right where we want it, right into that fibroceptile network. And that heat actually causes a little bit of immediate contraction. And then we're also triggering physiological processes that are stimulating collagen and elastin. So look, again, in the right candidate, still has an ability to produce collagen, that mild laxity, absolutely doesn't want to consider anything more invasive. It is a nice option. Something else I tell people is the least invasive something is, the more treatments they'll need, right? Yeah. So generally, there is a bit of a patience game to this. So three treatments a month apart is sort of my general regime that I give people.
So can I ask, is this a treatment you can have all over your face? So you can treat the eye area, under eye, jowls, yeah, everywhere? I know you can use it for the body so too.
There's a body tip that goes deeper. It's for tightening of the abdomen. I've used it for cellulite on thighs. But just getting back to the face, like, yes, we're not just stuck at 4 millimeters. We can go 3, 2, 1. And depending on where we are in the face and what our aim is, again, this is in the hands of the operator. We're able to adjust the settings and the depth and the energy that we use to achieve the result that we want. So overall skin rejuvenation, tightening, it's a bit of a all-in-one, which is great.
Why does it hurt so much? Everyone tends to get muscles being so spicy, so ouchy. Is there a medical reason? Is it the depth that it's going? Is it the heat that it's achieving? What is it?
Yeah.
Because I guess it gives you a sense of, if you're going completely painless, does that mean you're not going to get a result? I'm curious as to, you know, what the pain means.
Yeah, hey, great question. It's definitely, look, this is not a facial. We're not going to fall asleep during this procedure.
No, it's not a facial.
It's not a facial. No, it's not.
Good point.
I do use a prescription compounded numbing in the clinic, and I do think people are reasonably comfortable, but we're penetrating the skin with needles. We're using radio frequency heat, you know, 40 degrees and on. So if you think about that, yeah, absolutely, the pain pathways are going to be triggered. We're breaking skin.
What about someone with melasma? Does the heat can it trigger melasma in someone with heat triggered pigmentation?
So look, I would proceed with caution. Generally, this is a device that's safe on all skin types and with melasma as well, because of the tip is insulated. So our melanocytes sit in that top layer of skin, and having that insulated tip means that the top layer is not getting that repeated insult with heat, and there's a level of protection with that. I would still absolutely proceed with caution, try to prep the skin with some skincare and make sure, you know, it's somebody who's going to follow the rules, you know, no sun exposure, no heat, no sauna afterwards. And when you have a reasonable patient with reasonable expectations, I think it's safe to proceed in those cases.
Speaking of reasonable expectations, what can you expect? And, you know, if I was comparing apples and pears, what would this device give me compared to the other things that I may already know about?
Yep. So look, I think you look great, Bahar. I know you've had a few treatments.
You do? I look great.
I was going to say, I know you've had a few treatments. Look, for you, again, I'm not looking at you face to face. I'm sure there's a few fine lines. You should see an improvement in those. That mild laxity that you have, we would hope that, you know, we do see an improvement in those. And standardized before and after pictures are what are key here. So my patients keep coming back and they're happy with their results because I'm able to show them, right? I'm able to show them that difference. And I do see it. So are you going to have that extreme pull? Absolutely not. Are you going to just feel that slight firmness and lift, which might keep you happy for another 5 to 10 years? I think so. I think you'd be a good candidate.
Okay, so let's talk about other devices that you have or other tools that you have in your clinic that are, you know, good toolkit items for an aesthetic physician to discuss with a patient, other than filler, injectables, facelifts, you know, sending them off to the plastic surgeon. What are some other devices or technologies that you like to explore?
Yeah, so for me, the next level up from the radiofrequency microneedling, again, I know there's a variety of threads and a lot of people don't understand the differences. We can chat about that if you have some questions.
Well, Ease, I want an absolute 101 in threads. It is like such a commonly asked question. And it's an old technology. Threads have been done for, 50, 60 years. So it's not new. And the premise of it is from the surgical realm, correct?
Yeah. I think you'll still find some plastic surgeons around the world that include suture suspension or thread lifts in their tools when they're doing other procedures.
So tell us, what are threads and where can they be used, and what are the different types of thread technology and applications that, you know, we should discuss with our physician?
Yeah. So look, 50, 60 years ago, threads were permanent and probably not as great as they are now. Mostly these days, you're going to find dissolvable threads. So they're inserted into the patient's face, but they don't actually physically remain forever. Most threads these days are going to last in the tissue for around 3 months or so. And what we're hoping to achieve with that is collagen stimulation, lasting collagen stimulation, and also a mechanical physical lift when we're using COGS.
I loved about threads. Yeah. I mean, you walk out of that session, everything is hoisted up.
Yeah. So what we're talking about are cogged threads or barbed threads, which is what I most commonly use. And I use just dissolvable PDO threads, so polydioxinone. And what that is a nylon suture. So essentially it's a suture that's used in surgery that has been turned into a barbed lifting thread. I think some people get a little bit confused because there are short, smooth threads around as well. And those are called PDO threads.
And when you go on TikTok and Instagram, you see people with all those little pink things coming out of their face. That's not the threads that you were talking
about.
Those
are not the long lifting cog threads that I'm talking about. No. Those little threads, look, I think they may have a role if you're just looking for a little bit of strength in your skin, but you need a lot of them. You need to scaffold them, and you need more than one session. I think seeing a few little pink things sticking out of your face, you know, and doing that sparsely is not going to achieve much. So I don't really discuss those threads with my patients. I don't think they'll be pleased with the outcomes.
The longer thread that we were talking about.
Yeah.
What is the correct terminology for them, for the long?
So I would call them, if you were going to your practitioner, I would be asking about long lifting threads or cogged or barbed threads.
Cogged or barbed threads, long lifting threads. Yep. Got it. Nice to have the terminology because it gives you confidence if you know what you're asking for. I always like to get our, you know, vocab a little bit stronger so that we can advocate for ourselves in a consultation session. So thank you so much.
No, great.
When I had that treatment, one thing that I noticed was the immediate result, like that's given. And then I had a bit of swelling, which is that common?
Yeah, I'm assuming that a bit of local anesthetic was also used to keep you comfortable during the procedure.
A friend of mine had it and he just like had a horrible reaction to it. Like he swelled up from it.
Okay.
But afterwards it looked great.
Yeah. Do you know which threads you've had or your friend had?
It was the lifting threads. It was definitely the lifting threads. And the other thing that I would say from my experience is that it was tender for a while. And there was a feeling that I'd been hoisted up. So I was aware that that something had happened. It wasn't like if I'd had a device or ultrasound or a HIFU or anything like that. It wasn't like that. I was aware that something internally was hoisted up and there was like not a stiffness, but like a change in my physiology internally.
Yeah. I think people can feel that tightness and they love it. What I usually tell my patients is, yes, you're lifted, you're going to feel that, and then you're going to feel a bit of a drop and you're going to, right? And then you might go, oh, what's happened? That's perfectly normal. So, you know, your tissues are shifting, the barbs are readjusting, and what we're waiting for is then that physiological collagen stimulation. And that's when you have your ultimate result. So it'll be somewhere in between your initial hoist and the drop.
Yeah. And the collagen stimulation cycle, the benefits that you see, that incremental lift that you see after the initial drop, that takes about, for me, it took about 3 months.
Yeah, absolutely. I usually say around three.
Yeah. So so I had the immediate bang for buck where I thought I looked gorgeous. I took photos from every angle. I couldn't believe how good my cheekbones were. My jawline was super snatched. Like it was wild. It was beautiful. And then I had the drop after the swelling and the initial hoisting up. And then 3 months later, one day I remember just looking in the mirror going, feel good. I look fresh, yep. I look lifted. You know, my jawline was looking quite nice. My cheekbones were cheekboning. But it took 3 months. And then one day I
cheekbones were cheekboning, yeah.
Yeah, they were. And I thought, okay, all right, now I get what all this is about. But in that didn't last that long. So I'm wondering, should I be having threads more often? Should I be combining thread therapy with something else? How long should it give me that kind of appearance and the collagen stimulation? What's normal?
Yeah, again, it depends on the threads that were used. I tell people, and it depends on the person as well. Look, one year usually, two if you're lucky, you'll
a year out of it. So I would say about 9 months to a year out of it.
Okay, yeah, and then it's up to you. It's up to you if you want to combine that with an energy device, or if you're somebody who maybe wants a few threads every couple of years. The more, the merrier. So when you have the procedure, obviously the more that you have, the more of a lift you'll have, the more of a lasting result that you'll have as well. A lot of the times, obviously, people have their budgets and we come up with a plan and we work within that. So if that means maybe another session in 2 years rather than a bigger session at once, that's something to think about.
And again, comparing apples and apples, just, you know, thumbnail, please. No one hold me to this and no one will hold you to this. What is the kind of range of cost of investment if you were having threads? Because I think, you know, everyone knows about fillers and stuff. They talk in mils or whatever. So there's a level of familiarity there. But what would, you know, a thread lift treatment cost as a range in Australia?
Yeah, so again, it depends on the practitioner, the threads that are being used. Some people price per area of the face. Some people price per thread. I think generally you're looking at about $2,000 to $5,000, depending on how many areas are being treated and how many threads are being used.
Are there any questions that you would recommend we ask our physician when we are exploring having threads? Are there kind of any rules of thumb that you think would be great for the patient to engage with to determine whether this is a good modality for them?
Yeah, I think absolutely it's important to know which threads you're having, the brand name of the threads, the material that they're made out of. And this is important if you go to another practitioner in the future as well. And even if you're considering a facelift in the future, your surgeon should know if you've had a thread lift before and which threads were used. A good surgeon won't mind. They'll be able to work with that information. But it's unable to actually know what threads and what material was used. Find out from your practitioner how long you can expect your results to last. I think it's really important to be clear with patients on this when they're making the decision as to whether it's the right procedure for them in terms of their long-term goals and their financial goals as well. And also, I just ask them, am I a good candidate, right?
Is there anyone who isn't a good candidate? Who isn't a good candidate? Yeah.
Again, a lot of laxity and loose skin. So we can't take away skin, right? That's what surgery is for. So if that person is sitting across from me, somebody who you can just see they've got, you know, loose skin in their neck and their lower face, I say, do you want surgery? Is that something that you would consider? If they say no, absolutely not, then I will, you know, discuss all of this with them with caution. But if they say, yeah, if that's what you think I need, then I'll refer them to my favorite plastic surgeon for sure.
Do you use laser in your practice? Are there any other energy devices that you use in conjunction with, you know, the other toolkit?
Yeah. So we've got laser for pigmentation and also for collagen stimulation. So again, for people who don't want any downtime, don't want to break skin, there are lasers and technologies that can stimulate collagen for them. Again, this is for somebody who's looking for that subtle result, just looking to stay fresh.
It's not going to give you a lift, is it? Laser will not give you a lift. Maybe a tightening, but not a lift.
Yeah, no. I don't think you're getting a lift with laser. Maybe a little bit of tightening hydration. You know, you'll feel that top layer looks better, especially if you're doing it continuously. But if you're looking for an actual lift, laser's not the solution.
So while we're on the subject of lift, I guess I'll mention this. A lot of people in the past went to their aesthetic physician seeking a lift from filler, but filler doesn't lift. Filler volumizes, correct?
Correct, yes. You can create the illusion occasionally with a few tricks, but it is not a lifting modality. And that's where people fall into a trap, I think.
And so what are some volumizing options that are not filler, that are technology-based, or skincare-based, or what are some other things at your disposal as a cosmetic physician that could perhaps give that benefit of redensifying skin, plumping the skin, adding volume? So
I'm actually going to circle back to Threads for 1 second, because there are a few cool innovations with Threads at the moment, coming from Korea, actually. There is a thread. Have you heard of filler threads at all?
No.
Okay. It's now the company that I'm dealing with was trying to liken it to a cardiac stent. I don't know if that's the case, but essentially a thread that's folded over something we place in the tissues, for example, in a jawline.
So kind of to pop it.
And it just pops up and stents up. So I've now got those at my disposal, and they're pretty cool. So that could be something to think about.
So that's volumizing. That's potentially volumizing, because it's going in and then popping up to give that volume.
Yep. And it's leaving behind more collagen than our traditional modality would.
I will say something. I don't know if I've told you this, but I had an internal bra put in in my breast, under my breast, and the lift that gave me was quite extraordinary. First of all, it was, you know, not a huge procedure. I have minimal scarring, but it was the same principle as threads. It's it dissolves and it helps your body form its own collagen and elastin, and then the scaffolding, and then that provides a lift. So I do think that there's, even though it's an old technology, I think it shouldn't be a dismissed technology. And I really am so excited that we were able to have this conversation about it, because I think, you know, for people who don't want to necessarily have surgery, maybe they're even a bit gun shy about energy-based devices or other modalities, it's good to know what's available. Can I ask you, can we talk about FaceTite, which is kind of like a hybrid, maybe a turbocharged treatment modality? It's made by the same people that do Morpheus8, right?
Yes, it is. It runs off of the same platform.
Can you tell us about what the technology is and what the application might be? Oh, yes.
Yeah, I've got a big case today after this, actually. Yeah, so look, this is a radio frequency cannula. Can you see them from?
I can see the needle. So if you're just listening to this episode, you can also catch it on our YouTube channel, Rescue TV, and you'll be able to see the device that we're talking about. So it's a big, long needle attached to, I would say, I don't know, a little pincer device.
Yep. Look, I think it's a very elegant looking device. So we have a radio frequency cannula and also a sensor here for the skin. The cannula goes under the skin, and we can heat up to 70 degrees. And this sensor here can heat the skin up to 40 degrees. And what we're doing is targeting, again, that fibrocytal network, which is just in that subcutaneous layer under the skin. So we're causing contraction of those fibers, and also, again, stimulating collagen and elastin. So we're getting an immediate lift and then triggering that physiological process. The other thing we can do with this, just because we're able to heat to that degree, is remodel fat as well.
So almost this, like a little liposuction procedure. Is that what we're talking about?
Almost. We're not physically removing any
fat. So we're melting it.
It does. So I actually have seen fat oozing from my entry site on a few patients. Mm-hmm. And so in a way that is a bit of liposuction. But yes, the body, the fat cells are destroyed, and then that's cleared through the lymphatics over time. So again, the results with this can take 6 months, and the ultimate result can even take up to a year. But most people, I take my after pictures at about 6 to 8 weeks. And that's when people really start to notice a result with this. And it's my go-to just before surgery. So it is really, really lovely in the lower face when you're really starting to be concerned. that you're jowling.
So it's going to give you lift.
It is. It is.
Give you heightening.
Yep.
And it's going to give you rejuvenation of collagen and elastin.
Yep.
And how long does the treatment last? Something, because it's quite invasive. Like we're past radio frequency here.
Yeah. So this is the step down from surgery. So this is, I think, a great stop for people who just aren't there with a facelift, but are really concerned about, in particular, their lower face or neck. 5 years, 5 to 10 years, I'd say, very similar to a facelift. We can't stop gravity. We can't stop aging. You're going to continue that process. But we can definitely get you a few years with this.
So my question to you with this is, obviously, because of the, it breaks skin and it's doing a lot more with the heat. The heat is a lot higher. Is this done under twilight or sedation, or how is the procedure performed?
Yeah. I personally do it under tumescent anesthetic, which is fluid and local anesthetic together. That's probably the most uncomfortable part of the process. That swelling does two things. It helps us conduct the radio frequency energy, and it also gives me space to work.
Basically, you're puffing up the skin with water, right? Is that what's happening?
With saline, yes, and anesthetic together. You may be able to go to a few providers who will do it under sedation or twilight. That is sort of a facility that has more staff on hand and can provide that service. But it is very tolerable with you awake and with tumescence.
You know, we talked about the downside of, or rather, who shouldn't have this procedure for the radio frequency and needling. Who shouldn't have this procedure? Who is this not good for?
Very similar. So people whose collagen stimulation abilities are severely impaired and compromised. People with excess skin are going to see minor tightening, but they'll be disappointed. Again, they need a referral to the plastic surgeon generally. And people with, again, who don't have the patience or perhaps unrealistic expectations, right? With this procedure, it's so important to trust the process and give it a good 6 months at a minimum to really appreciate your result.
Is there anything that can go wrong with this procedure? Because, you know, we talked about the pain of the other one. Is there anything that, you know, you need to be aware of if you're investigating face tight as a procedure for yourself? Because I'm, you know, super curious about anything that's pre-surgery. And I think anyone kind of in that range of, you know, 50 to 60 who is looking for more from aesthetics and doesn't want to go under the knife. It's exciting and interesting to know about new technology, but it's also important to know that nothing comes without risk, because this is a technology we haven't talked about before on the show. I'm wondering if you could share, you know, the anecdotal and also in your experience, what you think you need to be aware of.
Yeah, all procedures have risks, Bahar. Easy question. And this should always be discussed prior to proceeding with anything. I think the big things to consider here is that this is a reasonable procedure. There is downtime. Usually a compression garment is worn for the first few days afterwards, up to 2 weeks. You're going to be swollen, okay? You're going to be swollen for a week, up to 2 weeks. And the biggest risk, and this is the one that I absolutely make everyone aware of, is, and the number is 10%. There is a 10% risk of a nerve, neuropraxia, or nerve palsy of the facial nerve. And what that means is you might get a slight droop in your lower face or your lip here. I personally have yet to see that, but I have heard about some cases. I mean, it's just important to understand that.
Yeah, and I think that what you're saying at the beginning of this is that it works. Like, it's a device that actually delivers some results. So in order to do that, we're affecting change beneath the skin, and therefore there's going to be risk. And I wanted to go back to, if I can, sorry to jump around, when we were talking about lasers and pigmentation. Is there, you have melanin-rich skin, I have melanin-rich skin. I have melasma. Lasers used to scare me. I found a laser that works for me, and I'm really, really happy with it. But that took years to find a laser that I felt safe with. And I'm wondering, can you talk to, you know, the different Fitzpatricks and and, you know, what the advancements in laser technology has been for treating pigmentation, because you said that that's why you have laser in your clinic.
Yeah. So look, I'm also, look, it's 5 for 4, and for me, very similar experience. Scared of lasers, was told in the early days when I was on the patient side of things that I wasn't appropriate for certain lasers, right? I think even hair removal, I think we had a bit of trouble with that as well.
Yeah.
When it first came out.
Well, now bald egg, I found the laser that could take every last bit of hair off me.
Did you? All right, you'll have to tell me afterwards. But lasers have come so far. I think at the end of the day, what you're looking for in a laser, if you're sort of a FITS 3 and up, is something that isn't heat-based. If you're looking to treat pigmentation, isn't heat-based. Yeah, that's the safest option. At the Center for Medical Aesthetics here in Surrey Hills, we have a Q-switch laser, which I still think is the gold standard for melasma.
Q-switch.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what does that mean? And what, you know, what if I was a consumer and I was having this conversation with my aesthetic practitioner?
Yeah.
And I said, look, I'm interested in laser, but I have melasma, or I have dark skin, or I have a little bit of anxiety. This, what are some words that we can use to kind of ascertain if the technology that's in their clinic is suitable for us?
Yeah. So the key switch that I have here is photoacoustic technology. So it's actually using sound waves to penetrate the skin and break up pigment, which is then cleared by our body, by our lymphatic system. So I think the most important thing to ask as a patient and a consumer is what is the technology here? How does the laser work? Is it using gas? Is it using a CO2? Is it using heat? Is it using light? Is it using sound? I think anything that isn't heat-based is something that you can consider.
And one of the things that I've learned recently, and I did a great episode with Nadine, who's the editor of Spine Clinic, and we talked about all the technologies that are out. And you know, when we go to all these conferences, and, you know, I'm really pleased that finally consumer media has been invited to attend some of these medical conferences so that we can learn more and then share more, is that there are such a lot of options available in clinical technology.
There are.
Yeah. And there are a lot of amazing results that can be achieved if the practitioner is adequately trained, if the device has been imported legally and correctly, the patient that is receiving the treatment is, as you said repeatedly in this episode, is a good candidate for that device or treatment. And then also, as you said at the beginning of it, is your aftercare. So I think that this brings us on to the role of active skincare in an aesthetic clinical setting. How important is good skincare?
I think it's incredibly important. I think if somebody isn't willing to commit to good skincare, you know, there needs to be another conversation. Are you willing to spend all these thousands of dollars and then not protect that investment in your skin, right? The first question I ask people when they sit in front of me is, do you wear your SPF every day? And you'd be surprised how many times I hear no. It's insane. Yeah. So that's the number one rule for me. And I think almost anyone that you speak to will tell you, you have to protect your skin with SPF every day, especially if you're somebody who's concerned with pigmentation and melasma. It's so important. It's the number one thing you can be doing. If you're not willing to do that, then it's interesting that you're, you know, even coming to an aesthetic consultation or anything.
Yeah, I think, but I also think that people are still confused. There's such a lot of information and we're getting it from so many different sources. So when we come, by the time we get to an aesthetic clinic and we're having that conversation with our practitioner, we've got all these ideas in our heads from media, advertising, social, friends, there's recommendations. There's a lot. And we kind of think we're a citizen scientist. We know what we want. I want an A, I want a C, I want a this. And then you sit down and you have that really sober conversation with a dermal clinician or an aesthetic physician or a nurse. And you suddenly realize how woefully unprepared you are. And the question I guess I want to ask, and I want to ask this, I'm not being cute by asking this, is there truly a difference between product that's sold in a clinical environment and what we can get in a retail environment? And if so, what is the difference? Is it the consultation is better? Is it that the ingredients are better? Is it that the formulations work more? why should we invest in clinical skincare?
Yeah, that's such a hot topic right now, isn't it? And people are asking, what even is medical grade skincare? So look, I think in my mind, and I know I carry a couple of lines here, and the reason I do is because I know that these companies have invested in the quality of their ingredients, the concentrations, that they've done controlled studies on the efficacy. And we know that they're formulated in a way that the active ingredients are stable and active in the skin. I think sometimes some of the sort of pharmacy skincare brands don't necessarily have those checkpoints in place. So you might not be getting the same quality product.
You don't think, like, even when it's like a massive multinational, which produces at a scale that is just hard to even fathom, and don't, that they have their R&D isn't going to have the right, because people are, you know, with the cost of living and all of that, people are looking for where they can potentially cheat so that they can invest more in, say, a clinical service versus skincare. But, you know, if you're realistic and you look at someone who's coming and having clinical services throughout the year and using clinical grade skincare, you're looking at it, you know, someone who's spending probably $2,500 every 6 months on the upkeep of their face and body. So I guess the question I'm asking you is there such a vast difference that you would say if you're investing in clinical services, you really should stretch your budget a little bit further and invest in clinical skincare? Or are there things that you think we can save a little bit of money on so that we can potentially invest in new clinical services?
I'm going to circle back to your point of the multinationals with, you know, the huge R&D departments. I think if you're somebody who's on a budget and you're using a reasonable brand and your concerns aren't, you know, specialist grade, I think that'll be fine. I think if you're using the right ingredients, you know, your A, your C, etc., and it's working for your skin, that's totally fine. If I was going to splurge, I would splurge on a good vitamin C and a vitamin A. I think there's a few that stick out in my mind, and we just know that the time has been put into the ingredients and the research. If you have it in your budget, absolutely splurge on those. We know that they work. We know that they're, you know, part of a great basic skincare routine, and we know that there's some really great ones out there. They are on the pricier end, but I would probably not save on those. If I was going to save, and I'm sure you've heard this before,
cleanser.
Your cleanser. Yeah, absolutely.
Quality.
Yeah. We have such strict regulations on our SPF that we have the best sunscreens in the world here. You know, generally 50 plus. If it's 50 plus and you like the way that it feels on your face, absolutely go for it.
I'll round off this conversation with your insights on regenerative medicine and where you think we're going with this in clinical and also in skincare. You know, for the past 10 years, we've had PRP, which is regenerative medicine, using your own blood and platelets and biochemistry to rejuvenate skin. But a lot more is happening in this space and a lot more is available to you as a dermal physician. So you've got the biostimulators, you've got exosomes, you've got new technology. What do you see as exciting in the field of regenerative medicine in your space?
Yeah, there's so much coming out now. And I think, again, shifting away from some of our older modalities, people are getting a little bit more wary of those. And they want to know. They want to know, how do I stay rejuvenated without resorting to the old ways? Something really exciting, you've mentioned it, is exosomes from Korea. I think in Australia, we're still waiting for a little bit more research to come through, but anecdotally, I've seen some really lovely results. So exosomes are vesicles that are broken off from cells that carry all kinds of messages to influence our cells, basically, into behaving better. Does that make sense at all?
I like that as a cheat version. Thank you.
Yeah. So they come around, they kind of, you know, see what the cells are doing and they go, all right, guys, you know, I'm going to set the example. We're going to do some repair and we're going to, you know, be better, basically. And I think people like the idea of regeneration. They like the idea of their own biology, you know, kicking up and helping them to feel better in their skin rather than exogenous materials being used.
Are you core biotech and regenerative medicine in your practice, or is that something you're kind of sitting out on and seeing, you know, where the technology falls and where the research falls?
Yes, I've brought in a few things. So we've got exosomes here. We have polynucleotides as well, or salmon DNA. I'm sure you've heard of that.
Beyond that, my favorite tip ever.
Yeah. I've been using it mostly around the eyes. And yes. definitely seeing some results. Did you do that?
Yeah, I've had two sessions. I'm due for my third. The improvement around the under eye darkness and skin thickness has been really impressive for me. But I've also noticed a re-identification of my eyelids. So I just had started to notice for the very, very first time a little bit of crepiness in my eyelid. So if I squinted, I just thought the skin just stays there a little bit longer rather than just bouncing back. And post these two treatments, because for the first time I've been able to have a treatment in that area, I've definitely noticed an improvement. I would say my overall skin glow and even pigment evenness has improved as a result. Look, for me, I can only look at, you know, what I'm seeing in the mirror. It feels like a re-identification and a plumping of my skin.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It feels like volume. And I haven't had filler in a while. It feels like volume. And I love it. I am really enjoying it. And I've had other biostimulators in the past, which I liked. And definitely, it was a visible change. It was a change that other people noticed and commented on, which is always nice. But with Reduran, for me, it has been really a fantastic experience. And in full disclosure, I was gifted the treatments as a media partner. Well, not a media partner, a media reviewer. And so I haven't paid for it, but I would pay for it. Made a difference. It really made a difference.
Yeah, great. Yeah, we're definitely offering that in clinic, and I'm loving what I'm seeing
and
so far.
All of this bioregeneration. So I'm curious as to, you know, when you're attending conferences and what you get excited about, because I know what I get excited about as a 50-year-old consumer. I'm curious as to what you're excited about.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think I did a post on this, and it's just, and you may have even had a guest on recently that touched on this a bit. And it's just, you know, if we think of aging in medicine and start treating it like a disease almost, you know,
World Health Organization is calling aging a disease.
There you go. Well, thank you. I didn't know that. I'm gonna look that up. Yeah, absolutely. So if it's a disease, then therefore, you know, our treatments, and can we get ahead of it? And can we change our biological processes, right? So very cool, very exciting. I think it's sit back, watch this space, definitely see what's happening at the conferences. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to all the new stuff that's coming out. Fully on board with it all.
Do you think epidermal growth factors are also a biotech that is going to be interesting for us to look at?
Yeah, definitely.
And I mean that, I guess, is that not just injectables, but also in topical preparations, because there's a lot of talk about the skin microbiome, the epidermal growth factors in general being incorporated into compounded skincare, prescription skincare.
And that there's skincare on the ground at the moment that has them, and also I know we have some hair loss and skin treatments here that incorporate growth factors as well, and these are topical treatments. So absolutely, I think all of that, growth factors, there's things I can't say, exosomes, all of those things are definitely what's up and coming.
Okay, so to wrap it up, if I was going to come and see you at your clinic and I was an absolute newbie, what would a consultation look like? What happens in a consultation if I've never been to an aesthetic physician? Say, you know, I'm a diehard Sephora Mecca girl. I do all my skincare. I get all my advice. I haven't had many treatments other than maybe a couple of little injectables here and there. What's the process?
we just have a good chat. You know, how old are you? Let's talk a little bit about your medical history, because that's important. If you're on any medications, that's important to know. What skincare are you using? What do you like about it? What don't you like about it? And then, you know, what's your why? Why are you here? You know, is there something that's bothering you? Is there something that's making you feel not your most confident self? Usually that's where we'll start. You know, what are you hoping to achieve around that? And what are your long-term goals? So are you hoping to avoid a facelift? Are you just hoping to feel the most comfortable in your skin? And we go from there. And sometimes it's the discussion is around maybe not having any procedures and maybe just honing in on skincare and maybe just a few skin treatments. But it takes that consultation to get to that point. And I think sometimes that's why people are scared to come in. They think we're going to bombard them with, you absolutely need this and this. But sometimes it's just starting, isn't it? And that might just mean a good consultation around your skincare and just a small plan for the year without getting too crazy. That's a good starting point, I think.
And what if I'm a seasoned aesthetic aficionado and I come to your clinic and I say, you know what, let's take it up a notch. Talk to me. What does that consultation look like?
Yeah, it gets a little bit more interesting then. I absolutely want to know. I want to know what you've had, where you've had it done, what you've liked about it, what you haven't liked about it. And again, you know, so this happens quite a bit, actually. You know, this person comes in, they're like, I've been here and I've seen this person and I've done this and I've done this. And it's like, okay, what, you know, why are you here? What are you hoping that I can, what value can I offer? I think with somebody a few aesthetic treatments, they're probably at the stage where they're hoping for those final steps before considering surgery. And that's when sort of I come in and all those modalities we discuss today. Usually it's a discussion around lifting and tightening for somebody who's had a few things. They're probably looking pretty good too.
Great. Well, I think that was just a beautiful conversation. I hope that, you know, if you're listening today, it felt like a conversation that you would want to have with, you know, your very wise cosmetic physician or older sister who knows a thing or two about skincare. I always like to think that the best way to learn about what's new is to have your questions answered. And sometimes, you know, the show is the first place they hear about a technology and we answer a few of their questions so that they have the confidence to go into clinic or go into store or go into the office of their dermal clinician and say, hey, I'm excited about this technology. Let's have a conversation. So I appreciate it so much. I love speaking to you. I love learning from you. Please follow Dr. Amy Chahal on social media as well. Her content is super educational. And she's not doing any weird dances.
It's with the new regulations, content. I thought about it. I am kind of funny now because, you know, if you can't do anything else, be funny, right?
Okay, but it's good content. It's good information.
It's good content.
It's good content.
It is good wonderful content. To have you. Thanks so much, Bahar. It's been such a pleasure.
Yes, so good to talk to you as always. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please share and rate this episode. I'd love that. I'm Bahar Etmanan, your host and founder of Ageless by Rescue. For more exclusive content, show transcript, behind-the-scenes video, real people reviews, and extended interviews with experts, I invite you to please follow us at Ageless by Rescue on Instagram, Facebook, and Rescue TV on YouTube. You can also sign up to receive our e-magazine and newsletters, all for free.